Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the PBSC podcast. Steve Moore and Mark Castleman coming at you from the early part of the year in 2024. Hope that you're all doing well and that you enjoyed the holidays. We are here for episode number 210. And it's really good to be with you as we jump into a really cool submission from the partner of an addict. She brings up a topic that we talk about often, and it's a fairly brief submission. So we're going to go ahead and read that. And then just dive right in. And again, it's a good one because we talk about this fairly frequently, but usually it's kind of in transition or briefly in conjunction with something else. So it's going to be a good podcast. And this is what she says. I have heard there is a correlation between ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, for those who may not have heard of that, and addiction. Have you noticed this in your practice? And what is your advice to both addict and partner on how to cope and battle through both issues collaboratively? I looked into the symptoms of ADHD, and some of my other long-term frustrations with my partner could fit that, but others that don't. It's hard to know what could be attributed to the addiction, and then she has in parentheses emotional maturity and selfishness, versus what could be ADHD related. Mm-hmm. So great question. And it is. It's one that we do touch on from time to time, but usually it's kind of in passing when we're working on something else. So it'll be kind of nice to jump into this a little bit and give you our thoughts on where we go with this and how we kind of approach this individually. And our hope is that we'll give some valuable advice to this partner as well as partners listening, but then also the addicts as well. We're kind of expanding on her question. We don't want to just address the partner. We want you guys to walk away today from this podcast with a good idea of kind of a starting point if you as a couple find some of the same stuff showing up for you.
Yeah. And of course we want to emphasize we're not specialized experts on ADHD. We don't have clinics that specialize in the diagnosis of it, but we run into it a lot.
Yes.
In the work that we do. I remember back, as you do, Steve, when you and I were both involved in different places, but in, substance abuse rehab, where we were involved with helping, with people who have alcohol and drug disorders. This was, I wouldn't say always, but man, it was a great majority of the time part of that addiction, those addictions. We saw that all the time. And we Absolutely. See it a ton with regard to, sexual and pornography addiction as well.
And I'll just say something real quick before we dive into this, and I apologize because I forgot to say this. Oftentimes, ADHD and ADD, or attention deficit disorder, kind of get used interchangeably. They share a lot of the same symptomology. So if you hear us use those terms interchangeably, forgive us. We do recognize they are separate diagnoses, although they are very, very close cousins of each other. So just kind of keep that in mind for those listening. I can already see the questions coming in. But what about ADD, Steve? Mark, so we'll just get ahead of that now.
And sometimes we'll even interchange them, and you know, just slip and say ADD or ADHD. And they're like, wait, which is it?
Correct. Yes, absolutely. So,
and it was funny. I kind of went online, was as we all do, to, you know, search for different things. And when I saw this question come in, I pulled up some of the more authoritative sources on ADHD out there. And when I saw this description, I just burst out laughing, and I'll tell you why in a second. So here's what it said online. People with ADHD may have trouble paying attention, controlling impulsive behaviors, and then in parentheses, may act without thinking about it or what the result will be, or be overly active. And the reason I burst out laughing when I read that off the internet was that was the perfect, complete description of Mark. All through his pre-adolescence, teenage, and young adult years. you could have that sentence on the internet that says Mark Castleman next to it.
A picture of Mark in the diagnostic statistical manual.
Yeah, trouble paying attention, controlling impulsive behaviors without thinking about the consequences, and being overly active. There it is. That was my childhood, teenage, and young adult years.
Mm.
And the reason I bring that up is I am very familiar with the frustrations and the confusion and so much of what is a part of this whole disorder and how it relates to the whole side of addiction and compulsion. Because not only did I have all of the, most of the ADHD symptoms growing up, also had a lot of the obsessive compulsive issues. I had Tourette syndrome. Mm-hmm. I had anxiety stuff. You know, I was kind of the grab bag of what we're talking about. And the reason I bring that up is because having this crazy, busy, constant need to be engaged brain, antsy, fidgety, bored very quickly, right? Looking for ways to stay occupied. Do you take all of what we've just described and you now bring the whole world of the internet into play, and you have like this, I'm going to call it the marriage made in hell. When I first discovered, I thought it was the marriage made in heaven. I only discovered later that there's no such thing. But boy, did it all tend to just fill all the gaps I had because of these challenges. Right? Think of it, the internet, right? Constantly switching up, novelty, new material, coming at the speed of light as fast as you can push the button, right? Just spinning in front of your face. It was like the perfect matchup for all of these aspects of my brain. And so I got pulled in and just hooked instantly. Now, here's the great challenge with that. What I didn't know at the time was getting involved with all of this pornography, sexual addiction, internet outlets, gaming was a part of that. Social media was a part of that. That seemed to really help me with all these ADHD symptomology. I didn't realize it was like pouring gasoline on an already overactive, impulsive brain. I mean, it's like my brain had rocket fuel added to it. And before I knew what that was all about, I was deeply entrenched. And those aspects of my brain were worse than ever. So I could so relate to the question being asked here.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. You know, it's interesting because one of the ways in which this comes up sometimes in our podcasts were, oftentimes it comes up in more in-depth recovery-based discussions that we have with our D2C subscribers and Dare to Connect, you know, our program for addict spouses and couples is, I oftentimes will say somebody, and to my knowledge, somebody has not yet done this. At least I haven't seen the literature, but there really needs to be a study done between various types of addictive behavior and compulsive behaviors. And the relationship between ADD and ADHD symptomology, because I would conservatively say that if it weren't for a primary diagnosis of compulsion of some sort, when a guy comes into my office, you know, when I'm doing formal diagnosis for insurance clients and that kind of thing as a therapist, conservatively speaking, the guys I work with, 7 out of 10. Would exhibit enough ADD and or ADHD-like symptoms to meet a diagnosis for one of those.
I would agree.
When you go through the DSM and you actually, you know, kind of list the different qualities, they qualify. Typically, I don't diagnose ADD or ADHD in those situations because when you're looking at a primary diagnosis of compulsion, you start to get into, you know, making sure that you're giving a correct diagnosis. There are many conditions that addiction, for example, can mimic, or at least the attributes of, and ADD, ADHD is probably at the top of the list.
Absolutely.
Because as Mark indicated, right, we live in a world that kind of has geared ourselves not just around sex, although sex is a great example, but really kind of the world over, where we have instant access to endless amounts of new novel content on virtually any subject on planet Earth with anything, right? If you go to any pornography website, for example, and I do not recommend that you do, but those who have been and will know what I'm talking about, there is an ever-growing, endless list of pornographic categories, for example. We're talking about dozens, if not more, of categories of porn. With each of those categories, there are oftentimes subcategories. And it extends beyond just the pornography world, right? You look at dating apps, for example. I was talking to one of my single clients the other day, one of my single female clients, and she was talking about how she was swiping left and right on profiles on a random dating app, right? Dating, just as recently as 20, 30 years ago, if you went on a blind date, it was this big affair where you were paired up with somebody and you had phone calls or texts back and forth, and then you set something up and you met. You know what that looks like now? You download an app and you sit there in your couch and you just quote unquote swipe right or swipe left.
Right.
And here's a new profile. Here's a new profile. I mean, right. So this idea of immediate access, no time delay, everything at your fingertips, which are all kind of attributes that feed into this lack of required attention or attention span. We live in a world that kind of is pushing us towards living in an ADD sort of mentality to a degree, if that makes sense, not to be too dramatic about it. But I guess what I'm trying to say is we live in this world that very much fronts this symptomology, this list of symptomology.
Well, and a big part of it, for example, that's also in that ADHD, you know, list of symptoms is this impulsiveness side.
Yes.
And in the old days, you might have an impulsive tendency, but it would typically take some pretty good planning effort going out of your way to act on that impulse.
Yes.
Not so today. It's impulse, instant feeding of that impulse.
Yep.
Right? That's a big change. So impulsivity has just gone off the charts.
Absolutely. The other day, I was, or a couple of weeks ago, so Brittany and I will own the fact, and I hate that I do this to a degree, but Brittany and I will own the fact, we do like 90% of our Christmas shopping on Amazon. Just going to own it. We sit there on Black Friday in bed and we knock out 90% of it in like 2 hours between Amazon and a couple of other sites. And we live in a world now where I know for a lot of our audience who are younger, especially, you may not remember this, but I'm in my 40s. Mark's older than me. We both come from an era where that's a fairly new concept. When you were buying something back in the day, like, for example, from like a catalog, like when my mom would get something from like Land's End, that was like a big deal. It was like, make sure you get the right size. Make sure you get the right color, you know? You know how my wife buys clothes right now on the internet? Brittany would be okay with me saying this. She literally will find a sweater or something that she likes. She buys six sizes because all these sites offer free shipping. So she just buys every single size. She tries them on and then she sends the other ones back. And it doesn't cost her a dime.
Yeah, look at that.
The contemplation value is like 2% what it used to be just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Right? So you can see how just all these different facets of life, what we have gained in convenience, unfortunately, in some ways, has kind of set us up for this impulsivity trap, just as a population as a whole.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, and when go ahead,
Steve. I was going to say,
you're good.
As you look at all this, you know, we could go on and on and on.
Yes, we could.
How all this is manifesting. But what do you do about it? Because the question that was sent in to us is there a way to come at this as a couple collaboratively?
Yes. You
know, to come to some solutions. And the really good news is that many of the aspects of approaching both of these have a lot of crossover. So things that I would use to approach my ADHD, my impulsive issues, my, you know, distraction, busyness stuff, and also what I would do to start to approach and recover and heal from my addiction, they have a lot of things in common. And so it is easy to do work in tandem in these two areas. And so that's really good news. So as we start to talk about, how do you come at this? Let's talk first of all about the addict. Then we'll talk about the partner and then the couple.
Yeah, let's do that. And I like that.
Yeah.
So if we look at the addiction side of this, if I'm an addict and I'm in early or even mid to late recovery, right? And I'm trying to get a hold on this. Step number one, just like when it comes to managing the addiction itself, is going to begin mapping out your symptomology.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what kind of, if you, we've already talked about a lot of those symptoms today, we'd encourage you if you follow through with this podcast and what we talk about here today, just do a quick Google search on ADD or ADHD symptoms. Okay. And then take that list and start to compare it to what a typical day-to-day looks like for you. Right. As you go throughout your day, whether it's tied to your addiction behaviors or not, right? In what ways are you struggling with impulse control? When you struggle with impulse control, what are the things that frequently bring that up for you? Right. A new thing, for example, that is huge with a lot of my clients that are, and YouTube is already a problem for obvious reasons for a guy struggling with pornography use. But one of the things that comes up with a lot of my guys are these new YouTube shorts. Mark, I don't know if you're familiar with this concept, but.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this concept of these short videos, right? It was originally started on platforms like Instagram and others, and has since been transferred to other sites now where everybody's kind of got these YouTube short videos. I work with guys who, hell, I'll just be honest. I've found myself on more than one occasion, I'll be sitting there flipping through those stupid YouTube shorts, and before you know it, 45 minutes has passed by.
Oh, yeah.
You're just watching these useless, stupid little two-minute videos on just random nonsense.
Yeah.
Random nonsense.
Yeah.
Right. And so, so sitting down and mapping out those symptoms, what does this look like for you? What environments typically does this show up in? Am I alone typically, or am I with people? If I am with people, then what do those symptoms usually look like? And what other symptoms accompany that? So I'll give you an example. When guys oftentimes that I work with and Mark work with, when they begin to go down the road of addiction or impulse control, they become very rigid and objective based in their thinking. And what I mean by that is they will become increasingly irritable if other stuff is disrupting what they're doing. A guy will, if he's, 20 minutes into his YouTube shorts, he might start, and one of his kids comes up and says, "Dad, can I answer a question?" Right? The dad gets snappy with the kid.
Yes.
Or he starts feeling angry or resentful, right? Those kinds of things are all red flags that can help us to understand when we are getting into this highly objectified, highly escapist, new novel, exact opposite with being present mentality.
Yeah. One of the ways it showed up for me in my relationship, for example, I would go with my wife somewhere in public and I literally had an inability to keep my attention on her. My eyes and my head were going everywhere, right? Squirrel, squirrel, squirrel. Mm. And when I started to work on it, it was a hellish experience to try to rein myself in to where I could be fully present and actually focus on one person at a time. I thought I would never be able to do it. I'd spent so many years on the other side of that, right? That was another symptom always for me, inability to be fully present in public space.
Absolutely. So you're going to want to sit down and map out those symptoms, okay? And just like with addiction, the reasons behind that are myriad, but the biggest one probably is the more acquainted you are with those symptoms, the better you're going to be at getting ahead of them, okay? Before they become problematic, before they lead to relapses, before they distract you from commitments that you're making in your marriage, right? In Dare to Connect, in our Addict Spouse Couples program, we had a really cool discussion about 3 weeks ago, I think it was, Mark, on the importance of taking out the trash. It was an addict session. And almost the whole session was almost a full hour on the importance of taking out the trash. Now, a lot of you listening to this might be like, whoa, people are paying to be in a program to take it, talking about taking out the trash. And the answer is that day, the answer was yes, absolutely. And the reason why is because even though we addicts oftentimes don't make links between follow through on completely non-addiction related issues, for the traumatized spouse and the traumatized brain, it is evidence-based and watching and vigilant for that kind of evidence. What things does he follow through on? When he makes little commitments, even if it's completely unrelated to sobriety or addiction or anything, does he do them?
Mm-hmm.
Right? How many guys out there listening have you promised you'd take out the trash or get that thing in the mail or whatever, and then you don't do it and your wife follows up a day later and you're like, "Oh crap, I'm sorry, I'll do it," or whatever the case may be, right? Believe it or not, guys, you are making huge, massive trust deposits or trust withdrawals into your relationship account, and specifically into your own recovery if you're dealing with an addiction recovery dynamic. Okay.
Yeah, because if you want to, there's lots and lots of research. Back in the early days when I was doing neuroscience research, I was up at one of the universities with the guy who was kind of one of the nation's top, you know, addiction impulse control experts. And when I was asking him, you know, he said, yeah, we look at the brain scans of guys who have been in addiction or compulsion for years, and you can see the impulse control center has become handicapped. It's not operating at its normal capacities. And I said, that's pretty disturbing. Of course, me having a lot of that so-called damage to my impulse control center, the first thing I wanted to know is, can it be reversed? Can it be healed? And he said very quickly, absolutely, yes. Of course, you guessed my next question, how? And I thought what he was going to say was, well, Mark, you got to be willing to do stuff that's a lot of hard work and takes a lot of time, and you just put your head down and grind it out. And he said, nope, that's exactly the opposite of what is needed. And he said, if you want to restore the impulse control center, he said, you do lots of little activities that don't take a lot of time and aren't that hard, but you do them consistently, day in and day out. Routine, routine, routine. Structure, structure, structure. He said, that is what heals the impulse control center of the brain. And that was a huge insight for me. And I have seen that work. And like you say, taking out the trash, making your bed every morning, right? At the same time. This is the kind of thing that starts to get us into the place where we become healthy through addiction and through the ADHD stuff as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, if we were to kind of sum it up, because we're going to move on to other topics here with our time limit today, but when it comes to the starting point for an addict and working on this stuff, right, understanding your symptomology is the beginning, like we talked about, and then building off what Mark just said, there are three things that, for example, in my clinic, I bring up with guys. We start off with planning, structure, which Mark just talked about, and accountability/follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whether it's with a partner, whether it's with your daily renewal partner, whether it's with a sponsor, whether it's in your own journaling into yourself, right? A combination of those things. And we're going to talk about that here in a minute about the coupleship dynamic and how that plays a role. But that's a good beginning spot. Planning out, making that schedule, the follow through on that routine, setting it to some sort of a structure, and then being accountable to somebody for that. And then rinsing and repeating are all a great starting point for that.
Super important. And then add to that mix mindfulness activities.
Yes.
Meditation, journaling, walks in nature. You've got to learn how to slow down. You've got to learn how to intervene with that busy brain. The power of the pause. And it takes enormous practice to start to learn how to do that. I literally had to develop that as a skill because I had no ability to do it, you know, within me already. What do you mean slow down? What are you talking about? The pause? What's that? No, I have trigger response. I don't have trigger pause decide how to respond. It was this trigger reaction.
Yeah.
You have to practice that.
Well, in creating a structure where you can eliminate distractions, right?
Yes.
Mark and I, every time we get on one of these podcasts, one of the things we always do is silence our phones. Mark actually did a mini exclamation of frustration under his breath about 10 minutes before we started today, because his phone is blowing up about random outside things.
Yes.
Right? We live again in this crazy, accessible, noisy world where it makes it really hard to focus. So we have to take very proactive steps to that, right? And to make sure that we're setting the stage for success. If you're going to be a guy who's going to practice accountability, structure, and follow-up, don't put yourself in an environment where you're trying to do those things while having the TV blaring in the background, all the notifications on your phone going off, and in the middle of when you're babysitting your kids. Okay?
It's
not
exactly.
Not the time or environment.
Yeah, yep, yep.
So if we shift over here a little bit, let's shift gears to the original question. Let's talk about the partner. What can a partner do on this side? And then we'll talk about collaboration and we'll wrap up. Because there are some things that a partner can be doing to help navigate this process while their spouse is figuring their stuff out with this. We really do empathize and connect with this partner who wrote us in, as well as all of you who may be listening. Living with us, and when I say us, I mean us in addiction, Mark and I being in long-term recovery here, can be exhausting. Yeah. And the lack of follow through, the lack of follow up, sometimes just the lack of focus or just being present. I remember more than once, my wife is one of the most patient people I know, but I remember more than once, Brittany, we would be out doing something and she'd be like, did you hear what I just said? Because my brain is just like off in la la land, right? Mm-hmm. Those little things, they're little, but we understand it adds up, especially in company with all of the other things you're dealing with in this process. It gets very frustrating. Yeah. And so there's a couple of things that we would definitely say to you. Number one, and we encourage you to do this in a way that does not involve you becoming a policewoman. Okay. We wouldn't expect you to follow him around or follow through on these things because it's his job to follow through. But we would encourage you to use your voice if you haven't already. And we want to quote unquote give you permission today to request accountability from him, right? What goals is he working on right now? There's nothing wrong with saying to your partner, hey, I'm looking for some safety here. Can I ask you, what are you working on in your recovery? What are your goals right now? What are some things that you're being accountable for? Brittany and I just had this discussion this last week, and it was a really positive, awesome one with it being the new year, right? What are the things you're working on? When can I expect to see X, Y, or Z, right? Mm-hmm. Et cetera. Next thing, be clear that you're focusing on attention on results and not claims in order to achieve, maintain, and develop safety and trust, okay? I was joking with Mark before this because one of his wife's, LaDawn's, key phrases that he talks about oftentimes is talk is cheap. Show me. We need to make like a brass bust of LaDawn with that, like on a plaque underneath.
And that came out of decades of her putting up with me doing the opposite. Talk a big game and don't deliver.
Mm-hmm. LaDawn found her voice and she's like, talk's cheap, man. Show me. Like it's time, you know? And so there's nothing wrong with that. And being able to explain that and say, look, I need to, please do us both a favor. Quit making claims that you're not going to follow through with, right? I need you to be real raw and honest with me. So let me know what you're willing to commit to and not. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I'd say with this, and then we'll have Mark lead us into this collaborative discussion as we wrap up here. Working to understand the nature of his symptomology and him sharing with you that symptomology and where this stuff comes from for him, what's going on in his headspace, what ways he gets pulled into this, can not only help you to collaborate together on it, but it can help. Oftentimes when we understand the causes behind the condition, it creates the breeding ground for healthy serenity and compassion, right? Now, compassion does not rob accountability. It's still just as much his job to change. It's still just as much his responsibility to make and keep goals. All of the responsibility for change continues to fall on him. But you understanding where it comes from and why, for many of the spouses that we work with, that helps them to be able to, one, develop some compassion for him while keeping accountability high, and just as importantly, depersonalize some of this. Because we know that a lot of spouses get really frustrated and think, I'm just not important to him. I'm just not this. I'm not, he doesn't care. He doesn't. And is that the case in some cases? Sure. Does he need to show up better? Of course. But oftentimes it has a lot less to do with the spouse than they realize. And understanding that can help, again, the traumatic blow of where that comes from. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, I love that. You know, and then we come to the part that was asked in this question that came in. How do we collaboratively approach this? We've talked about individually. Let's look at what we do as a coupleship and a team. My wife and I have worked on this a lot. So she's become really good, for example, at setting healthy boundaries. And around what? Collaboration versus rescuing. She used to jump in and rescue me all the time. Now she's learned how to collaborate with me, cooperate with me without coming in and doing it for me. What does that look like? We have a little thing that's called say what you see. Now, this is critical. There's some important words here. I have given her permission. And I cannot stress that enough. I have given her permission that when she sees these symptoms in me, that she can call them to my attention. Hey, Mark, I noticed that you're not really making eye contact with me and your eyes are darting all over the place. Where are you? My responsibility in giving her permission is I then, here's another important word, receive that from her, someone who loves me and that I love, we're friends, we're partners. I want to know from my partner, what do you see that I can't see? What do you notice that my brain doesn't have the capacity to notice? I would really love your help on that. So let's collaborate, not so you can rescue me, but so that you can bring it to my attention, and then I can receive it and then decide to act on that noticing. Now, here's the side of the partner that says what she sees. Can she do that without getting into the nagging place, where she now suddenly becomes responsible for him in public places or whatever other situation? And can he receive her noticing without him going defensive? This is why the giving permission and receiving is so important. And so just those are some words, some approaches that have worked, you know, for us. Allowing each other to own your own side of the street, but also being able to show up as a team and stay friends. And if it starts to fall apart, take a break, right? All the things we talk about so much here on PBSE.
Yep. Keep the transparency dialed up high, right? When issues come up, speak them. One of the things that sets up couples for so many issues, not just what we're talking about here today, but many, many issues, is from a place of love, we hold back on our true feelings from our partner. And it creates an instant breeding ground for resentment.
Yes.
And the longer we let that stuff sit and go untouched, unspoken, whatever, obviously, if it's something we can let go and surrender, mazel tov. But if we can't, we need to bring it to the forefront. Because not doing that means it will come to the forefront at some point, usually in a grandiose and or dysfunctional fashion.
Yeah, exactly.
So with all that being said, thank you for being with us today. We know this podcast was a little bit on the longer side. As always, we so value your patronage here at PBSE, and in the spirit of being loving and direct with you, if you want to take your experience in recovery to the next level, get your wonderful heinies into D2C. We would love to have you come check it out. It's a new year. It's 2024. There is not a better time to take your marriage, your relationship, your connection to the next level. Let 2024 be the year where you beat this thing. Every addict that's listening knows what I'm talking about when I say that. Let this be the year. Let us help you help it to be the year. Wherever you're at in this process, we promise we can take you to a better place. And that's not because we're cocky. It's because it's the truth. It's because we've been running this program for well over 2 years now. We've been doing this a long time. We bring over 40 years of experience in personal and professional a recovery experience and clinical training to the table, and we will leverage that all for you in a group setting, and we would love to have you join us. So you can check out the free 2-week trial we still have going at daretoconnectnow.com and grab that from us there. And as always, if you would like something to be addressed in a quicker, far less frequent fashion, please, we are a little bit backlogged right now on questions that are submitted, but please do get those into us at pbsepodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. All right, everybody, have a great day, and we'll see you next time in PBSE.
Take care. Everything expressed on the PBSE podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.